Today, the topic of my talk is the purpose of the practice. You come here to practice, but I don't know what purpose you come. What purpose is the practice? To me, okay, we have two purposes. One is immediate purpose, another one is ultimate purpose. So the two purposes of the practice, number one, immediate purpose, is to overcome the habitual of reaction towards likes and dislikes. When we like something, we react with craving. When we dislike something, we react with aversion. So this is our habitual reaction, and untrained mind's habitual reactions. And there are a lot of consequences of this type of reacting towards likes and dislikes. Okay. And the second purpose is ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose of the practice is to see the five aggregates as they really are in order to end the suffering. Not by committing suicide. Okay. So there's two purposes. Okay. So I will talk deal with first purpose. First purpose first. Okay, in our daily life, our six sense bases always open to the impingement of the six sense objects. For example, the eye always open to form. The ear always open to the impingement of the sound, whether it's pleasant sound, unpleasant sound. And our nose always open to the impingement of various types of smell, good or bad. And our tongue always open to the impingement of different tastes. And our body throughout the day open to the impingement of tangible objects, soft, hard, hot. All the three elements, earth element, fire, and wind element. And our mind also always open to the impingement of various thoughts, past, present, future, imagination, and so on. And for an untrained mind, we react very fast. Whenever it's pleasant, for example, somebody praise us, when a praising sound just impinge to the ear sensitivity, very pleasant feeling arises. Always automatic. Automatic. Even Arahant has that pleasant feeling. So always automatic. So for an untrained mind, the mind will just crave for it, grasp it very fast. Reaction of the mind is very fast. So we grasp that pleasant feeling as a permanent feeling is permanent, it's my feeling. And if it's an abusive word, then unpleasant feeling, when an abusive word contact to the ear, automatically unpleasant feeling arises. And for an untrained mind, we just reject this unpleasant feeling. We don't like it. We reject. We react with aversion to this unpleasant feelings. This is our habitual pattern of reaction if we are not aware of all the occurring of all this phenomena. Okay. So, and if the object is neutral sound, impinge the ear sensitivity, then neutral feeling. When there's neutral feeling, we think there's no feeling. So there's ignorant about the neutral feeling. We think there's no feeling. Feeling occur all the times. Okay. So we always react, our habitual pattern of reaction is crave for the pleasant and hatred towards unpleasant and ignorance about the neutral one. This is called habitual pattern pattern of reaction. You can check your own daily life. Do you react in this manner or not? Okay. So what are the consequences if we react with this pattern all the time? Okay. If we react with this pattern, this pattern means craving for the pleasant, aversion to the unpleasant, and ignorance to the neutral. And this pattern, this type of reaction, leave behind three types of karma tendencies. Okay, let me talk about the first one. Karma tendency is called current life effective karma. I take an abusive word as an example. Okay, somebody, you know, when you are enjoying coffee in a coffee house, then somebody come to us and start to abuse us using all the harsh language. So unpleasant feeling arise, followed by anger, almost very fast. So anger is a mental factor. It's a mental state. Every mental state produces four elements. Yesterday we talked about four elements. Every mental state, whether it's a good state or bad state, produces four elements in a group of kalapa particles. Okay. So when the mind is obsessed with anger, it produces four elements in the body. And among these four elements, there's one element called fire element. This fire element will become very excessive. When it becomes excessive, then your face becomes red. Your face becomes red and the body becomes so hot when there's anger because of the fire element produced by this anger. The body becomes so hot. And when the fire element becomes excessive, the wind element also follows, becomes excessive. So the wind element move very fast, then your heartbeat become very fast. Your heartbeat becomes very fast to the extent that some people, the body shake. When the anger is too strong, the whole body shake. So you can imagine this situation. Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Comfortable or uncomfortable? Uncomfortable. Why no answer? Uncomfortable. So at this moment, the law of karma is punishing you. This is called current life effective karma. Because of your anger, sometimes you say karma, I cannot see in the future. But now we are talking about current karma, current life effective karma. So at this time, you know, it's so uncomfortable, heartbeat so fast, face reddened, your body shake, you almost cannot control yourself. It's so uncomfortable. So at this time, karma means law, the law of action and reaction. So at this time, the law of karma is punishing you at this very moment because of your unwholesome thought. Okay. And this, according to Buddha's saying, and according to Chinese a classical medicine, you know, we have one book called Huang Di Lei Jing. This book also says all emotions, all unwholesome mental state affect the organ of our body. For example, anger. Anger affect the liver. Fear affect the kidney. So every unwholesome thought hurts the organs, internal organs. So this also same with the law of karma. No? So if a person get angry very often, then if you go and see Chinese physician, you know your liver is not good. Okay. Then, okay. So because of that anger, then our health get affected. And I mentioned this temperature, fire element. This temperature has potentiality to produce new generation of another particles inside the body, as well as external outside the body. So this particles, fire element has potentiality to produce new generation of particles in the form of energy outside the body. So when you get very angry, you know, then this energy travel from the internal up to external. And if your good friend happen to come, you know, the good friend will quickly turn away because the energy is so unbearable. Even though you do not scold your good friend, but when you get angry, no one will come to approach you. No one want to approach you because the internal, the fire element has spread out to the external. Okay. And this also is this also has been proven by one of the Japanese scientists called Emoto Masaru. I think you all have heard about this book, The Secret of the Water. So this scientist, the Japanese researcher, he take one cup of water and he utter good word. Let's say he take one cup of water and say, I'm grateful to this water. Then he takes some of the water under a microscope and see this water will become very beautiful crystal. But at another time, he take water and say, you fool, you know, utter harsh speech to this water. Then he take a sample under the microscope, this water become deformed crystal, very ugly crystal. So even the water, which we think is inanimate beings, still respond to our emotions. How about the human beings? How about the plants, the sea, the mountains, the moon, the sun, and everything on earth? So Buddha said, indeed, when men become extremely corrupt in thoughts and deeds, the energy rushes from this extensive earth up to the orbit of moon, suns and stars, countering or antagonizing even the realm of space and the whole organic world of trees, etc. At such times, day and night, moon and fourth nights, seasons and years are out of joint. The wind blows wrong, out of season, the sky does not rain sufficiently and seasonally, and the crop ripen in the wrong season. Men who live on such crops are short-lived, weak and sickly. The moon, sun, stars and planets move irregularly. So finally our corrupted mind come back to us. So we become short-lived, weak, sick. This is called the law of karma, action and reaction. Okay. So our unwholesome thought is responsible for the destruction of the world, for all the disaster we have now, the earthquake, the tsunami, and the typhoon and hurricane and so on. In fact, our unwholesome thought, the energy from our unwholesome thought travel far and affect the whole organic world. Okay. These are the consequences, okay? And also, if we react with anger all the time towards unpleasant, whether it's unpleasant form, unpleasant sound, unpleasant taste, smell and touch or thought, if we react with anger all the time, this anger will become our second nature. we become a person with anger temperament. So this also the consequences, okay? And when we hear about an abusive word, and we are unable to bear that anger, unpleasant feeling and anger, then sometimes we react, we fight back. We react with harsh speech and with physical attack. Then we perform the actions, we perform the karma that leave behind karmic tendency in the future life. Just now I mentioned is current life, now future life. Every karma once performed leave behind karmic tendency. This karmic tendency you cannot see, just like a seed. When you throw onto the earth, the seed has the potentiality to grow, but you cannot see that potentiality. You cannot see through your eyes. So also, every karma once performed leave behind karmic tendency. When time is ripe for this tendency to grow, then it bear the result. Okay. It bear the result in two ways. Okay. So before I talk about the working of karma, I want to deal a little bit the working of the mind. The mind, in a snap of finger or in the blink of the eyes, billions of consciousness arise and pass away. Suppose, you see, when you act one second, one blink of anger, billions of consciousness arise and pass away. And this anger arises associated with that consciousness. Anger is unwholesome mental factors. Every unwholesome mental factors leave behind karmic tendency. So suppose you get angry for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. So 1 second, billions of karmic tendency already there. 5 minutes, how many karmic tendency? Uncountable. Uncountable. So this karmic tendency will keep on lying dormant, following the lying dormant or hidden under your mental stream. Consciousness keep on flowing. So this karmic tendency lie dormant with the continuity of consciousness or the stream of consciousness. When the time is ripened, just the seed thrown on the earth, when meet with fertile soil, sun and water, then it sprout. So also karmic tendency work in the same way. So it leaves behind another two types of karma. One is called subsequently effective karma. Mean next life, subsequently effective karma. Just now we mentioned the current life, now next life. Okay. Next life karma, if a person, let's say, die with anger, when he get very angry, then he get heart attack. Then he passed away, died at this moment. According to the law of karma, he will be reborn in one of the four woeful states. He cannot be reborn in happy realm of existence because anger is unwholesome thought. Unwholesome thought, how can bring good result? It cannot be. So he will be reborn in one of the four woeful states. And if he come to the human world, one of his good karma performed in previous life suddenly ripened and he reborn in human world. Because of the anger, he will become very ugly person. Just like when we get very angry, our face become very ugly. So as a result, he will be reborn as very ugly person. So one, if a person reborn as good looking or not good looking, you are responsible for your complexion. Okay, this is called subsequently effective karma. Then there's another type of karma we call indefinitely effective karma. Because I say, one blink of eye, billions of consciousness arise and pass away. The anger follow the consciousness. So there are so many potentiality lying behind that. So it leaves behind indefinitely effective karma. This indefinitely effective karma will never exhaust, will never come to the end unless, until you enter into parinibbana. When you enter, you become arahant and enter into parinibbana, no more rebirth, no more mind and matter. Then how the karma ripen, depending on mind and matter. So no more karma, finished. So before you become arahant, as long as you have the rebirth, your past karma, we call indefinitely effective karma, will always waiting to ripen. So the anger, you know, so it cannot produce good result. It will always produce the bad result. So one has to suffer continuously. Of course, if you have a good thought, loving kindness, you bear the good result continuously. I just take the anger as example, you know. But we also have the good thought, you know, generosity, morality, meditation, all these are good ones, also will produce very good result in the current life, in the subsequently life, and in indefinitely effective karma life. Okay, so an example for this indefinitely effective karma is the Lord Buddha. Buddha has become enlightened and become good, has become enlightened and has achieved Buddhahood. Even then, he cannot escape from the old karma. So Buddha always has this back pain because in one of his lifetime, he was wrestler, always break other people's back. That's why even though now he became Buddha, he still has this back pain. So I think sometimes we have certain chronic disease. No matter how you see the doctor, it cannot be cured. This, I think, is the past karma effect, the effect of past karma. Okay? So this all are the consequences if we react with anger, with greed. I only take anger as example, so you can, you know, think of react with greed, with jealousy, with cruelty, with selfishness, and so on. Same pattern, same way of karma were going on. So if you react with good, then you bear a good karma. Okay. So this is called immediate purpose. By understanding all the consequences, this is called immediate purpose. Why should we practice the Dhamma? In order to stop this habitual pattern of reaction towards likes and dislike. And also, if you react with aversion, you hurt another person. You hurt another person, then another person also bear the grudge to you. So whatever life you come, this person just want to fight fault in you. Okay, so all these are the consequences that why we should stop the habitual pattern of reaction. Then how to stop? Tomorrow 9 o'clock. I will tell you how to stop, okay? Because now I want to deal another second purpose, the ultimate purpose of the practice. So the ultimate purpose of the practice is to see the five aggregates as they really are in order to end the suffering. Most of us, we know the practice of the Buddha is to end the suffering. Okay. Now, where the suffering comes from? I want your answer. Where the suffering comes from? The untrained mind. Okay. Yes. From the craving. Untrained mind because craving. Okay. So suffering come from the craving or clinging. Okay. Now next question. Clinging to what?
Soul.
Self. Okay. Or another word, clinging to five aggregates. Self is conventional truth. Five aggregates is ultimate truth. So clinging to five aggregates. Okay, next question. Why one clings to five aggregates? Why? Why we cling to five aggregates?
Ignorance.
Ignorance. Okay. Ignorance, or another word, because we do not see the danger of five aggregate yet. Also same as ignorance. We do not see the danger, the pitfall, for the disadvantage, the fault of the five aggregate yet. That's why we cling. Okay? Just like a baby or a child, a child who has not yet been burned by firework. Then he always attracted by the beauty of the glowing firework. So one day he got a chance to seize or grab the firework, and he get burned. Once he get burned, he start to realize, oh, this fire is dangerous. Once he realized this fire is dangerous and he was burned by the fire, then he started to let go the clinging to that firework. Before he get burned, he will never let go. He only see the beauty of the firework. He does not see the danger of firework. So also, we only see the beauty of the five aggregate. That's why we start to cling. The practice is to see the danger, the fault, disadvantage of the five aggregate. Then we get burned. Then we start to let go of the clinging of five aggregates. This is the ultimate goal of the practice. Okay. So the purpose of the practice, the ultimate purpose of the practice, is to see the five aggregates as they really are, as impermanent, suffering, and non-self. Okay. In order to get disenchanted, only when you see impermanent, suffering, and non-self, then you get disenchanted. Once you get disenchanted, then you finally let go of the clinging to the five aggregates. This is the ultimate purpose. Okay. Before we can see the impermanent suffering and non-self nature of the five aggregates, we must understand what are the five aggregates first. If not, how can we see the impermanent of five aggregates? Okay. So now I would like to explain to you what are these five aggregates. Okay. Number one is form aggregates. What are the form? What is the form aggregate? Yes, we have studied last night. If you cannot answer me, I will be very disappointed. I spent 1 hour to tell you four elements. So form aggregate is four elements, and the derived materiality from the four elements. Four elements is four primary element. Depend on this four element, there are some derived materiality. For example, eye sensitivity derived from four element. This is called derived materiality. Ear sensitivity, nose sensitivity, tongue sensitivity, body sensitivity, all these are called derived materiality. These five sense bases are very important. Because all the defilements come through these five sense bases. The four elements make up this body, and the defilement come through the five sense bases. So all these four elements plus the derived materiality are called form aggregates. I have explained in my Dhamma talk, I will not deal now. Okay, now we go to the second aggregate, feeling aggregate. To understand the non-self nature of each aggregate, it's good to understand their characteristic, function, and manifestation. So the characteristic of feeling is being felt, and the function is experiencing or enjoying the desirable aspect of the object. Each object has its desirable aspect and undesirable aspect. For example, chocolate cake has very desirable aspect. So when you are enjoying the chocolate cake, it's not you enjoying chocolate cake. It's pleasant feeling, enjoying the desirable aspect of the chocolate cake. But because you are unable to recognize, because our mindfulness is weak, our wisdom is not matured to see feeling as feeling. We only see feeling as I. So instead of understanding feeling, enjoying the desirable aspect of chocolate cake, we think I enjoying chocolate cake. You got it? Okay. So the function of feeling is experiencing or enjoying the desirable aspect or undesirable aspect of the object. So when we have unpleasant feeling, sometimes we have unpleasant feeling, let's say pain arises in me. So at that time, unpleasant feeling also arises because of the pain. So unpleasant feeling experiencing the pain, not you experiencing the pain. It's unpleasant feeling experiencing the pain. So if you can see in this way, then you are liberated from the pain. But we are unable to see this way. We cling to the pain as my pain, so the pain becomes even worse. Okay. And the manifestation is to relishing of the associated mental factors. Make the associated mental factors happy. When a pleasant feeling arises, it also makes the associated mental factors happy. Okay. So, dependent on what feeling arises. Okay, can you answer? Dependent on what feeling arises? Contact, yes. According to dependent origination, dependent on contact, feeling arises. How many contacts we have? Six contact. Eye contact. When I see the forms, there's contact. The mental factor of contact. Impingement is called contact. Then we have ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. So each contact, let's say I see the beautiful form, then feeling arises. What type of feeling? Pleasant feeling. So when I see the undesirable form, unpleasant feeling. So when I see the neutral form, neutral feeling. So each contact has three types of feelings. Eye contact has three types of feeling: pleasant feeling, unpleasant, and neutral. This feeling arises immediately when there is contact. No one can escape from that feeling. Even Arahant cannot escape from that feeling. Arahant also has pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, and neutral feeling. But the difference between Arahant and us is Arahant do not cling to that pleasant feeling as my feeling. We cling to that pleasant feeling as my feeling. This is the difference. Okay. So eye contact dependent on eye contact, there are three types of feeling. Ear contact also three types of feeling. Nose same. So six contact times three, we have 18 types of feelings. So feeling is a very good object to contemplate. We have 16 types of feeling for you to contemplate. Whether it's from eye contact, from nose contact, tongue contact, and body contact. Okay. So now you understand feeling, we go to perception aggregate. Perception aggregate. The characteristic of perception is it perceives the quality of an object. Let's say the breath. My Tuesday talk, I ask you to see the characteristic, the mental factor of perception. So the perception perceives the movement of the air through the nostril. So it perceives, oh, the breath is move in, out, up, in, out, in, out. So it perceives something, movement, move in, out, is breath. Now this is called perception. So it perceives the quality of an object. So the quality of the breath is what? Moving in and moving out. Okay. And the function of the perception is it makes a sign regarding those qualities so as to be able to recognize or perceive them again that this is the same. It makes a sign. Okay. Just like when you first see the bird. How can you recognize the bird? So when you first see the bird, you perceive bird has two wings, small size. You don't perceive bird as aeroplane. Aeroplane is big size. So small has two wings, fly in space. So you make a mark in your mind. You make a sign, a mark in the mind, so that second time when you see the bird again, through the mark you have made, then you can recognize it. This is bird. This is called perception. Okay? And so once we perceive let's say we perceive the phenomena, feeling. We perceive the feeling is permanent. So let's say you have pleasant feeling. Now you perceive that pleasant feeling. Then you perceive it as permanent. Pleasant feeling is permanent. So once you perceive the pleasant feeling is permanent, then second time you will recognize that pleasant feeling again as permanent. So every time once you perceive it as permanent, next time you will think it, perceive it permanent again, permanent again, permanent again. So you are so occupied with permanent, 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 because you already perceive it as permanent, and second time you recognize it as permanent again, permanent again. That is how the perverted perception of permanence comes about. So also, if you perceive this five aggregate as happiness, once you perceive it as happiness, then second time you recognize it as happiness. And this is how the perverted perception of happiness comes about. And once you experience this five aggregate or this pleasant feeling as my pleasant feeling, once you perceive in this way, second time you recognize it again, my feeling. That's why the perverted perception of I comes about. Once you perceive wrongly, it becomes so difficult to recollect, to change it. It becomes deeply embedded in your mind. Deeply implanted in your mind. Then you got to practice very hard in the vipassana to note impermanent, suffering, non-self, to change your perverted perception. Okay? Okay, so the manifestation the manifestation of perception is the action of interpreting by means of sight as apprehended, like the blind who sees the elephant. The blind, when he cannot see the elephant, so he used hand to touch. So he only touched one of elephant's foot. So by the action of touching the one foot of the elephant, he interpreted, oh, elephant is like that one straight line. So he interpret wrongly because he's blind, because he only see the sign of what he's because he the action of interpreting my meaning of sign as apprehended as what he apprehended, and he apprehend wrongly. So that deeply implanted in his mind. So if we apprehend wrongly, we always see wrongly, never see rightly. That's why once you see wrongly, always wrong. Perception, because perception is very strong, it will, you know, recognize wrong again and again. That's why perception is very important. It's listed here as one of the aggregate. Once you perceive wrongly, our action also follow wrongly. Then we keep on performing the karma that prolong our cycle of rebirth. Okay. So this is perception aggregate. Now we come to formation aggregate. The characteristic of formation is forming. Forming, fabricating, constructing. They form the form, bhikkhus. That's why they are called formations. And the function is to accumulate karma. Formation aggregate, the volition is the head of the formation aggregate. That's why bhikkhu, the Buddha said, Cetanahang bhikkhave kamma vadami. I declare volition is the karma. So volition, the function of formation is to accumulate karma. Which mental factor responsible for it? Volition. Okay. And the manifestation is intervening. Like contriving by becoming interested, acting upon. Let's say when you first, let's say you see, when you get your salary, the money. When you see the money, your mind start to think of it, start to get interested in that. How am I going to use this money? So you become very interested, a plan for holiday, how to buy a new car, you know. So you acting upon it and you create the karma. This is the manifestation of formation aggregate. Okay. Then the next one is consciousness aggregate. The characteristic of consciousness is cognizing an object. The function as the forerunner of its accompanying mental factors. We have studied quite a lot of mental factors, attention, mindfulness, effort, initial application of the mind. So consciousness must arise together with mental factors. But the relationship is, consciousness is the forerunner, is the head of the mental factors. So the function is forerunner of its accompanying mental factors. And the manifestation of consciousness is as a continuity of process rather than what it seems to be. Consciousness work in a way of continuity of process, rather than what it seems to be. It seems as if an independent being is experiencing the phenomena. In fact, it's not. It's just a continuity of process. But it seems to be as if an independent being is experiencing the phenomena. So we are cheated by always cheated by our consciousness. I will give you an example. Let's say you are watching television. When you watch television, you also take some chocolate, eat the chocolate. When you eat the chocolate, you smell the chocolate, the smell of the chocolate. You also taste the chocolate. And while watching television, you also hear the sound. And you are sitting on the sofa, rocking your feet. Okay, so eye consciousness see the vision of the television. So eye consciousness arises as one thought process. Then ear consciousness arises, hearing the sound, arises as another thought process. Then you are tasting the chocolate. So tongue consciousness arises, knowing the taste, as another thought process. And you also smell the fragrance of the chocolate. So nose consciousness arises, knowing the smell in another thought process. And you are rocking the feet. This is called sensei. Rocking the feet is body consciousness. Arise, knowing the movement of your rocking the feet. So there are different types of consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and you might think of something. Mental consciousness, thought consciousness. So there are six types of thought process arise one after another. Each one perform their own functions. But we are unable to see the continuity of the process, and we think all this as I. We put all this process as whole, one whole I. I watching, I hearing, it's the I, same I, seeing, same I, hearing, same I, tasting, same I, rocking the feet, same I thinking. So we are cheated by the consciousness. That's why Buddha say consciousness is like magician. Magician that treat this different thought process as one whole I-ness. So we have all these five aggregates, and these five aggregates work together. I explain it differently, but they work together. And these five aggregates form as conventional truth, I, being, a person, he or she. So he or she, I, a person, a being, are conventional truth. What actually exists is these five aggregates. Okay, now the question, how to see them? Because the ultimate purpose is to see the five aggregates as they really are in order to end the suffering, in order to get disenchanted. Once you get disenchanted, you become dispassionate. Once you become dispassionate, you become liberated through non-clinging. Because you already see the danger of the firework, just like a child has burned by the firework, then he doesn't want anymore. He let go his clinging to the beauty of the firework. So now, how to see these five aggregates as they really are in order to get disenchanted? The answer will come tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. Okay, any question?
When this body dies, when this life is over, there is nothing permanent that is reborn. That's correct, yes. There is nothing permanent from one life to another. So then, to whom is karma happening in the next life if there is nothing carried over?
Cause and effect. You just think of cause and effect only.
Okay.
Because your question is based on the I. So this type of question, if you ask the Buddha, Buddha will say, you put the question wrongly. He will tell you like that. Because you already assume there's I, you know, there. So Buddha said, you put the question wrongly. Okay? Yes?
That was a beautiful quote at near the beginning about the Buddha, about the energy going out of the universe. Where did that come from? Do you remember where that quote came from? Is that in the suttas?
Yes, Anguttara Nikaya. Anguttara Nikaya, I don't know which number already. Anguttara Nikaya, yes. Yes?
With regard to the sign that your mind makes when perceiving, can you help us out with some synonyms there? Can you help us with some synonyms?
Somewhat?
Words that mean the same thing? Is label appropriate? Is concept appropriate? Or is a sign an entirely different construct altogether?
I don't quite understand your.
He wants to know, is there another word for sign?
Oh, your label can.
Yes.
Label, mark. Mark also can. The label, you label it, you mark it. You mark it like we in a fixed pattern. But you label it, you mark it, you note it, a sign. Okay?
When you went through the form, feeling, perception, information, and you talked about the characteristic, the function, and the manifestation of each, is that something that's out of the Abhidhamma?
Yes. So if you understand each, their function, their characteristic, their manifestation, then the non-self will go away. Because you know each aggregate perform its own function, not you. No, the aggregate perform its own function. So its function is very important. This helps to remove the self. So to study Abhidhamma is also very helpful.
So consciousness is a continuity of many processes arising from.
It's a continuity of process, one after another, one after another.
Okay, so that's how it's continuous.
Because we cannot break down the compactness of the continuity. That's why we assume this self. If you can break down the compactness of continuity, then the self will be removed. Okay.
So, from one lifetime to another, into the future, is Sanyavikalasa let's say, in this lifetime you love strawberries,
Yes. You mark it as a lovable person, yes.
Then you see them in the next life and that same reaction, even though they look different, they're...
Yes. Although they look different. So, for example, you fall in love with this person, and you attach to this person, and you do not contemplate impermanent of your attachment. You do not contemplate impermanent of this attachment. Next time, when you meet with this person again, the attachment will come again to this person, although his looks already changed. Okay.
Is there anything that we can do now in our lives to counteract anger that we've had in past years?
They contemplate.
So you deal with that anger.
No. Yes. Okay. Good question. So. During your past anger, when you are angry at that time, you already performed the karma. Karma has already performed. That you cannot do anything.
No,
yes, they cannot. But in order, when you reflect The anger again, in order for not to let the anger to arise again. Sometimes when you get angry, maybe 2 years ago, now you think of it, you still get angry sometimes, you know. So in order for that, not for that anger to pass to now, you should contemplate the past anger as impermanent.
Okay. I don't feel the past anger any longer.
Okay.
But I know it was there.
Yes.
So
then you also contemplate it as impermanent. If you contemplate it as impermanent, it will not leave mark in your heart.
Okay.
Okay? Yes?
So the last moment of this life determines
next life. Yes.
So let's say we're looking at someone who's lived their life as a saint for a whole while, and then they die a horrible, angry death.
They die as so,
let's say they're a saint.
Sin.
A good person.
Okay.
A really good person.
Okay.
Has one horrible last moment.
Okay.
They are then reborn in the lower earth.
Yes, right? Yes.
And conversely, if a really, really horrible person had a single moment of generosity.
Yes. Yes. Then, but even a person, you know, okay, let's say, in Malaysia, one of my devotees' mother, she was very kind-hearted and very generous, support the Buddha's teaching, temple, you know. But one day she went for a walk and was hit by a motorcycle and died immediately. So his family member start to lose faith in the teaching of the Buddha. You say good begets good, bad begets that this good, kind-hearted person, why die at this accident? So they start to doubt about the law of karma, you know. And so to understand the law of karma, we cannot see only present life. Now what I say may not answer your question, but later on I will answer you again your question. To understand the law of karma, we have to see three lifetimes. You know? So, the generosity this old lady performed may not ripen now. Because we say we have three types of karma. Current effective karma, subsequently effective karma, and indefinitely effective karma. So the generosity this lady performed maybe only ripen next year, next life. But this life, she was hit by the motorcycle and died on the spot because of his past bad karma. The past, maybe past life bad karma ripened at that time, so she died because of past bad karma. But her good karma of generosity has not yet ripened yet. So after she died, maybe if that generosity ripens, she may reborn in good plane of existence. Okay, this may not answer your question. Now I want to answer your question is, a person who are kind-hearted throughout the life, but in her dying moment, in his dying moment, she has one unwholesome thought. Then this unwholesome thought will cast her to the one of the four woeful states. And you may say, very unfair. Very unfair. Then what for? I do all the good deeds, you know? But when he was cast to the one of the four woeful states, the lifespan of that state will be very short. I give the example of Queen Malika. Queen Malika, during Buddha's time, she was a great supporter of the Buddha. Invite all Arahant Buddha for lunch. Many, many years. Great supporter. But she has done one wrong thing to her husband. So after having performed that wrong deed to her husband, she keep on remorse. Remorse is unwholesome mental factor. Remorse is unwholesome mental factor. So instead of remembering all her good deeds, she always remember the bad deed she has performed to her husband. So it become a tendency of the mind. And during her dying moment, she still, this what she remorse pop up again. And she die, go to the hell. And I want to tell a story, whether you believe or not, it's up to you, okay? So her husband is a king, King Kosala, I don't know what king. The king of King Pasanadi or King Kosala. The king was very sad, you know. But the king believed that Queen Malika is such a righteous person, a generous person. She must be reborn in a happy realm of existence. But he want to be sure. So only Buddha can give him the sure answer. So he went to the monastery and want to ask this question, where his queen take rebirth. Buddha say, you know, Buddha know the queen was reborn in hell, but Buddha cannot tell the truth. If Buddha tell the truth, the king will lose his faith to the law of karma. But Buddha also cannot tell lies. You know, an enlightened person cannot tell lies. So Buddha used his psychic power. Buddha used his psychic power to let the king forgot to ask this question. So when the king came to the Buddha, he just cannot remember, what's the purpose I come here? For the first day he cannot remember, then he went back home, you know. Second day he remembered again, no, I must ask this question. So he went to the Buddha again. Buddha also same, using the psychic power, led him to forget until 7 days, you know. Buddha used psychic power for 7 days, you know, for him to forget to ask this question. After 7 days, the Queen Malika take new rebirth. He's suffering in the hell only for 7 days. Usually suffering in hell is very, very long. But because Queen Malika has performed great meritorious deed, so his life span in hell is very short. So he take, after 7 days, he reborn in heaven for a long, long, long time because of her generosity and her faith to the Buddha. So after 7 days, today is the last day, I must ask the Buddha. Then Buddha, today no need to use psychic power already. So then the king asked, where my queen take rebirth? Oh, your queen take rebirth in happy heaven. So Buddha didn't tell lies. So what I want to say is that it's possible a good-hearted person throughout the life suddenly have a unwholesome thought and die, can be reborn in the four woeful state. Because next, the last top moment is the crucial point where you take rebirth. But it can be very short there. So a hunter, you know, killing all the time. During her dying moment, this is also one of the story in Buddha's time. During his dying moment, if he can cherish a good thought, good wholesome thought, then he will be reborn in the good realm of existence, but maybe very short. Then after that good karma exhausted, then he, due to his killing, he will be reborn in the one of the four woeful state again. Clear? Okay. So time's up. Okay, thank you.